I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Maryland has now seen more than 1,000 new cases of coronavirus every day for the past 8 days, and the state's positivity rate has soared past 5%. Yesterday, Governor Larry Hogan tightened restrictions in restaurants and strongly discouraged large family gatherings. Baltimore Mayor Jack Young instituted even more stringent regulations for city residents. Today on Midday, another check on the economic impact of the pandemic. For retailers, it's supposed to be the most wonderful time of the year, but this year, as cases of coronavirus surge across the country, consumer spending may be a ghost of holidays past. Bill Thorne of the National Retail Federation, Melody Simmons of the Baltimore Business Journal, and Ben Ray of the Hamden Village Merchants Association join me on Midday after the news. Hey, everybody. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Yesterday evening at a press conference in Annapolis, Governor Larry Hogan revised some of the state orders concerning maximum occupancy of public spaces. He restored mandatory teleworking for state employees. He expanded warnings about travel to states with high concentrations of viral disease. And he issued an emergency order that expands hospital surge capacity. He also expressed dismay at the lack of compliance and enforcement of the rules that are already in place. About 30 minutes before the governor's press conference, Baltimore Mayor Jack Young issued a press release that reinstated some phase one restrictions in the city, which are more stringent than those suggested by the state. For example, Governor Hogan drew back the allowable number of people in restaurants from 75% to 50% of the restaurant's capacity. Mayor Young has set the limit in restaurants in Baltimore to 25%. The case count in Maryland of coronavirus cases continues to spike. We've had more than 1,000 new reported cases every day for 8 days. The governor says that we are in, quote, the danger zone. Even with a big uptick in cases, Maryland is actually doing better than many other states. But as coronavirus cases surge and communities around the country ramp up restrictions to stunt the spread, the economic impact of the pandemic continues to be crushing. And the timing of this resurgence of the disease couldn't be worse for retailers, who are facing unprecedented challenges as they enter their most important season. Today, we're talking about how the coronavirus will impact holiday shopping this year. Later in the program, we'll hear how minority-owned businesses hit hard by the pandemic are staying afloat. We'll also hear from Ben Ray of the Hamden Village Merchants Association about what retailers in his community are doing. But first, what can we expect to be different this year about the shopping experience for both consumers and store owners? Will the restraints of the COVID economy push more people to shop online as they search for bargains and try to avoid large crowds? Bill Thorne is the Senior Vice President of the Communications and Public Affairs for the National Retail Federation. He joins me now to discuss how retailers are responding to the strain of the pandemic. Bill, welcome to Midday.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having me.
So you all did a study last month about what consumers are planning to spend in this holiday season. What did you find?
Well, the consumers are ready to spend. There's some pent-up desire to actually spend some money on something other than office supplies and getting the classroom ready for in-home schooling. And so they are looking forward to actually celebrating the holiday season. And every holiday through the pandemic, we've seen pretty much record numbers of people actually celebrating the holiday and record numbers in terms of how much people are spending for the holiday. People want to celebrate. People want to kind of focus on something other than what's happening that day and what they're hearing on the news. And so we anticipate, and we've been talking with our CEOs, our retail CEOs in both businesses, large and small, and they're very optimistic. To your point, I mean, is the shopping season for this holiday going to be different? It's going to be totally different, but retailers are ready.
Well, I do see some data from the National Retail Federation that says you guys surveyed about 7,600 consumers early last month, and it seems that the general plan is that they're spending or planning to spend maybe $50 less than they spent in years past. I mean, is that pandemic related, do you think? Is that just you know, a cyclical thing? Do you worry? Is that number of concern to you?
It's really interesting because that same survey, what we found was that there people are less inclined this year, and we think this is where the spending is going down. People are less inclined this year to spend on themselves. They're not really doing the gifting for themselves. And so they're actually spending money on bringing joy and happiness to family and to friends, again, to kind of change the focus off of the coronavirus and elections and everything else that's going on in the world. And so, the consumer's very, very smart, and they respond to the things that are going on at the time. And so while that $50 may not be going into the retail holiday season, that money may have been spent previously on things like upgrading computers or electronic equipment that they need in order to do their business and to teach their kids from home during this virtual time. So it's not really a surprise, but we do believe that, you know, given the circumstances, that people are going to spend, and it will be a good holiday season for retailers.
And your membership, is the concentration among your members on brick and mortar stores, or is it a combination of brick and mortar as well as online opportunities for consumers? And if so, what is the proportion of each?
You know, it's really interesting because it's now become one of the same. It's just omni-channel. So most retailers have a web presence. As a matter of fact, the top 10 e-commerce sites are owned by brick and mortar retailers. So the online experience is a different experience, and yet at the same time, it's the same experience they would have if they walked into the store. They'd see the same kind of signage, the same kind of colors. The brand is very evident where they are and what they're shopping for. And people don't really differentiate anymore. I think even Wall Street's getting to the point where they used to report on online sales versus in-store sales. Now it's just sales. And that's the way it really should be. So I think the online experience, people, certainly during this time of the pandemic, more people have been shopping online than ever before. We anticipate that there will be a huge online shopping season this holiday, more than any that we've had previous. And I think that the retailers are ready. Another, I think, important part of that is a lot of the small retailers that didn't really have a robust presence online, they took this opportunity when they weren't allowed to have their stores open, to really bolster those online sites, to create an opportunity for people to buy online, pick up at the curb, to call the store, find what they wanted inventory-wise online, call the store. The store owner would meet them, you know, outside. So it was really a time of invention, and yet at the same time, it's something that retailers do every single day. They meet where the consumer wants them to be. They price what the consumer wants to pay. They have the inventory for what the consumer wants to buy. And so whether that's online or it's in-store, it really doesn't matter anymore. The consumer really isn't differentiating as much as they did in the past.
Bill Thorne is the Senior Vice President of Communications and Public Affairs for the National Retail Federation. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you have a question for Bill Thorne about retail and the retail industry, and if you have a comment you'd like to make about your plans for holiday shopping in this holiday season, we'd love to hear from you. 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wipr.org. You can tweet us at @midday WIPR. You can always follow me on Twitter too, @TomHallWIPR. So Bill, I guess what I'm hearing you say is that as far as the retailers are concerned, they don't care whether the sale is online or in a brick and mortar establishment. The brick and mortar establishments, though, do face some serious challenges here in a global pandemic that is getting worse at the moment. The trajectory is headed the wrong direction as we speak and as we enter into the heavy holiday season. So when it comes to, you know, Black Friday and Cyber Monday and Small Business Saturday, are retailers, going to be doing what they can to bring people into the stores physically, or are they downplaying that? What's the posture that most of your members are taking?
Well, I think this is going to be a very different Black Friday than what we have seen in the past, and maybe even into the future. The importance of Black Friday as it relates to holiday sales has been diminishing over time. I think that the retailers understanding what the challenge is going to be in terms of having people in their stores what they've decided to do is basically a part of what our campaign is all about, the New Traditions campaign, which is shop safe, shop early. And that is starting to offer those deep discounts that you would normally find on Black Friday or on Cyber Monday or on Super Saturday, the Saturday before Christmas, doing that starting in October. And literally the 1st of October, they were making announcements about Black Friday was every Friday through the holiday season, that they wouldn't, the consumer should not expect to find the deeper discounts on Black Friday itself. Get online, get it done, shop early, and relieve the stress of the holiday season. Get the shopping done, and you're going to find what you want at the price that you want to pay. And so people have responded in kind. And the other important part about that, I mean, I believe that, you know, they're not going to turn people away from their stores, but they're going to do what they need to do in order to protect the associates and the people that are shopping in that establishment. And that is following the guidelines. They're going to be doing what they've been doing, which is making sure that that facility is safe, it is secure, and it is sanitary. And so the problems that we're seeing today with the upsurge, I would say, and I can't say it with great research or anything other than if you go into the stores, you see what they're doing, you know they are not the problem. They're doing exactly what they should be doing and even going above and beyond what local health and federal state officials are recommending that they do, because they recognize that it's important to serve those communities, to get people into their stores in a way that is safe and that they feel safe and that they are secure and that they're being able to do something that they want to do, because people really want to get back to the stores.
And in terms of keeping those employees safe, unfortunately, one of the new dimensions and new parameters of a COVID environment and the retail profession is that employees sometimes have to de-escalate consumers who are uncooperative, who are, for example, non-compliant with an order to wear a mask in public places, which many states have, including here in Maryland. What are your members telling you about that, about any training that they're giving the folks that work for them? What are you hearing on that score?
Yeah, we've created a credential, Tom, at the National Retail Federation on de-escalation. And this is a training program for on-floor associates and managers, basically helping them to face a situation where they need to de-escalate with a customer that may be aggravated or irritated or wants to make a statement. Other customers that are, you know, frightened by somebody that is doing something that is not necessarily following the guidelines as established by the store or the municipality, state, or the federal officials. So de-escalation is incredibly important. It is the sign of the times that it's been a problem. But the vast majority of people that are shopping in stores are wearing masks and want to wear masks. I mean, our research has shown that that's not 70%, it's not 80%, it's closer to 90% of the people that are shopping in stores or in public are going to be wearing masks because they know it's protecting them and they know it's protecting their family and the associates that are serving them and the customers that are shopping with them. And so it's a very small number, but they're very vocal. With social media, you'd think it was, you know, everywhere, but it's not. And so it's important that people understand that the store is not doing something just because they want to make a political statement or they're trying to diminish the experience that people have in the stores. They just want people to be safe and they want their associates to be safe. They have an obligation to keep them safe. And you can't run a business if everybody that comes into your store thinks they're going to get sick. So you've got to do what you can in order to show people that you take it seriously and that that is a safe place to be.
The economic impact of retail here in Maryland, according to a study that you guys did a couple of years ago, and this is, 2018, the total impact on GDP here in Maryland, $69 billion. I mean, that's a lot of money. But the retail industry, the retail business was floundering to a certain extent even before COVID-19. I mean, we saw so many different shopping malls, for example, become kind of ghost towns and certainly, mirror images of their former selves. Obviously, COVID has impacted everybody, but what's the trajectory for the retail business in general? I mean, the brick and mortar store in general, as your members prepare for the future, in particular, a post-COVID future?
Tom, I think that you're right. There were signs of stress prior to the pandemic as it relates to retail. But I would say it wasn't floundering, and it wasn't that they were in trouble. It was just it's an evolution. Retail is constantly evolving to meet the customer where they want to be. And so there were some stores that were, they had too many locations. We are overstored as a country, as compared to other countries that don't have as much as it relates to brick and mortar. And so I think that there is a kind of a settling. And to some degree, the pandemic has, you know, advanced that. But I don't see it as a crisis, and I don't see it as a problem. I see it as an opportunity for the retailers to kind of reconfigure, rethink how they're doing the business, how they're meeting the consumer, where the consumer wants to shop and what they want to buy. And so I think post-COVID that the retail industry comes out stronger. I believe that they come out stronger because they have met the consumer during a time where the consumer needed them the most. And I think that they have learned a lot from this experience as it relates to inventory, as it relates to being fleet of foot in terms of how they are making changes to their business. There are those that would say that because of the pandemic, a lot of the offerings that retailers were considering in 2 to 3 years were offered in 2 to 3 months. So it's advanced retail, and they are responding by ensuring that the customer is aware of what they're doing, the advantage of taking advantage of those opportunities. And I think they're succeeding.
What about supply chain and anticipated interruptions? There were some interruptions in the supply chain, particularly in grocery stores early in the pandemic in the spring. Do you expect any problems in that regard again as this surge continues to worsen?
Well, it's funny, Tom, because, you know, there's nothing funny about this situation at all. But if you think about where we were 7-8 months ago, and, you know, it came on so quickly. And I wouldn't say that everybody was unprepared. I just think that people didn't know exactly what was going to happen. And so now we know. And we know what the you know, important things are that people are going to be looking for when they're considering, or there's the chance that they may be shut into their homes once again. So the retailers are ready for that. And in terms of the supply chain itself, I mean, the last 2 months in our research, it's a record number of containers coming into this country with product for retailers. Over 2.1 million containers of product. So the supply is getting to the stores. It's getting to the distribution centers. And so the inventory is there. And the retailers, again, they learn very, very quickly to meet the customer where the customer wants to be. So I don't think you're going to find the same problems that we had with the cleaning supplies, the toilet paper and other things, because the retailers know this isn't going away. And those things are always going to sell, so might as well have them overstocked than understocked.
Bill Thorne is the VP of Communications for the National Retail Federation. If you're interested, we've got a link to their website on our webpage, wypr.org/midday. Bill, thanks so much for your time, and happy holidays.
Tom, happy holidays to you. Stay safe and stay well.
Indeed. After a break, Melody Simmons joins me to discuss her reporting about how Black business owners in Baltimore are fighting to survive the pandemic. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, the trial plan of the aerial surveillance program that's been operating in Baltimore over the last few months was scheduled to end last weekend, but on Thursday, a federal appeals court granted permission for the trial to continue. It was delayed a bit because of the coronavirus. So we'll talk about what data has been gleaned so far from the surveillance program, and we'll explore why so many people, including Mayor-elect Brandon Scott, oppose the use of data from the planes moving forward. Plus, the great singer Freda Payne joins us ahead of her appearance this weekend at Keystone Corner here in Baltimore. Now we turn our attention to the coronavirus pandemic's impact on Black-owned businesses here in Baltimore. We're joined by Melody Simmons. She is a reporter for the Baltimore Business Journal who covers economic development. She's one of the contributors to the Business Journal's recent series, Small Business, Big Mission. The series examines the impact of systemic disparities on small business owners trying to cope with the pandemic's economic ramifications. And as we've reported previously, across the country, loans from the Small Business Administration to Black businesses declined by 84% since the Great Recession of 2008. The coronavirus has further compounded the struggle to access capital. The Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP, was supposed to provide economic relief to small businesses. And here in Baltimore, 72% of the loans went to businesses in majority white areas. According to the National Bureau of Economic Research, as of last spring, Black business ownership had declined 41% across the country. Melody Simmons, welcome back. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Tom. Good talking to you.
So talk a little bit about the financing challenges that local businesses are having. The series highlighted a few different businesses, and they had some different ways of approaching the issue of attracting capital. What'd you find out in your reporting?
Well, we found a mixed bag. A lot of what we are seeing is that these businesses are very gritty and very determined to make their dreams come true. We found a lot of methods of getting financing and capital to get the business open or keep it open during the pandemic, including GoFundMes, rounds of crowdfunding, and also just trying to put together a very aggressive and creative capital stack of different investors. So the playing field is not level at all.
You did a piece about the Reverend Dante Hickman, who is the pastor of Southern Baptist Church on the east side. Talk about what he told you when it comes to the challenge of attracting investors to, to a part of town that's, for a long time had some serious problems.
Yes, this is a story that's playing out in real time in our city. Pastor Hickman has been trying for years to get a community wellness center built over there in the east, on the east side, near Middle East, near Hopkins Hospital. In fact, they have a tenant, which is Johns Hopkins, but they do not have enough investors to invest to build this Southern Streams Wellness Center. So he is really trying to find investment. The problem is that the land values in that part of town are so low that for an investor to come in and put money into it, it doesn't work out on paper. So even though it's great for people and it's great for that community and will be a huge spark plug to get it going and get a lot of development moving in there, they cannot get the bricks. They can't break the ground, turn the dirt.
The Southern Streams location is in what's called an opportunity zone. Pastor Hickman actually went to the White House and met with officials there to talk about opportunity zones. These were, much heralded innovations that folks really on both sides of the aisle expected to be, great boosters to places just like the kind of place that Pastor Hickman's trying to build. What's your take on how successful, how efficacious the opportunity zones have been to date here in our town?
It's a mixed bag again, because there's one opportunity zone that we know about, a high profile one, the first one in the state and the city, which was over at Yard 56 in Greektown. That is that big retail, and it's going to have a couple of hotels on it, the center by Bayview. But in areas like Sandtown and even West Middle East and other parts of West Baltimore that are in opportunity zones, they're not getting the investment. The investors are coming, they're being given tours, and then they're walking away. So it's that really weird combination of trying to make your investment dollars work in an area that you're going to have to be patient. You're going to need 10, 20 years until you see a big return, because it's going to take that long to build up the community.
Melody Simmons is my guest. She's a reporter with the Baltimore Business Journal. She covers economic development. We're talking about the particular challenges that Black businesses face in development and attracting capital here in Baltimore. 410-662-8780. If you are a person of color who owns a business and has some experience that you can share with our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. Our email is midday@wypr.org. To tweet us, it's @midday_WYPR. So, Melody, your colleague Joanne Sullivan did one of the installments in this series and profiled a couple who owns a place called ANC Pack and Ship, which actually started right before the pandemic began. But it turns out that that kind of business is something that is actually thriving in the COVID exigencies right now. So tell us about their experience and how they were able to, get going and thrive, even though so many businesses are having such a tough time.
Well, this is a pleasure to be able to tell a success story, because this is, it takes all kinds of stories to make this package work. But this is located at 1400 Lombard Street on the west side. And this was a dream of a husband and wife team, Nicole and Calvin Orr, who actually had a building and they decided to open this business. It was a shipping hub, a copying place, just for that community. And in this pandemic, they have been able to make their first year in business a great success because of that. And they've just become a mainstay. ANC Pack and Ship has become a mainstay out there on the west side.
And then there's this group called BRED, B-R-E-D, the Baltimore Roundtable for Economic Democracy. Carly Milligan did an installment in the series in which she talked to Nicole Foster and Dwight Campbell about their business called Keju Creamery. They did some pretty inventive thinking about how to get some capital into their business. They do plant-based ice cream. Right. Healthy ice cream.
Vegan ice cream.
So evidently they, they didn't go to a traditional bank because so many Black businesses that go to traditional banks just get turned down. That's the fact of the matter. When analyzed by the sort of traditional ways that banks analyze loan risks, what were Nicole Foster and Dwight Campbell's experience?
Well, they did. They started a GoFundMe, and they are really still in the ramp up phase of their business. They have a great dream and a great vision for their product, which is pretty good, by the way. And everybody loves ice cream. And so BRED helped them with a loan, and they have given out a lot of loans to small Black businesses as seed money. And as you said, a lot of the banks don't really take a risk on some of these small entrepreneurs. There are some programs available, but the bar is high. So if you have a dream, if you have energy and vision, it's really great to be able to move it with the help of some of these small nonprofit organizations that do have seed money. You're seeing a lot of that crop up in the city. There's a lot of opportunity, even though we're in the pandemic. What we found in our reporting is that there's a lot of energy and drive to get some of these small businesses off the paper and into brick and mortar.
They did a Kickstarter campaign. They got $30,000 that way. One of the things that was interesting to me about their story is that this thing called Seed Commons, it evaluates the risk in a very different way. It's not all just spreadsheets and balance sheets. They place a high priority on their personal relationship with the person or people that they're giving the loan to. And they basically say, if we know these folks, if they're straight up people, if we have confidence that they'll pay us back, we will approve them for the loan. That's just not the metric that most banks use. Is that something you think can be scaled up? I mean, I guess BRED, this BRED thing, has given about, what, $8 million? Am I remembering that right? So far?
Million. Yeah, out to eight enterprises, eight co-ops.
I think 2 million out to eight enterprises. Yeah, okay. Just wanted to clarify that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We're seeing that a lot, the seed money, just because there is a great effort for people helping people right now. I think a lot of the conventional ways for the Black businesses, have just not been able to materialize. So there's a big push right now at a grassroots level to try to make this happen. And so we're seeing that in Baltimore, which is a really cool thing at this point in time.
You know, nationally, even though the economy was growing, this is pre-COVID, there was at one time 101% increase in bank deposits, an 82% increase in commercial loans. But there was, during that same period, a decrease in the loans given to Black-owned businesses. So there's just no doubt that Black-owned businesses face considerably harder barriers than white-owned businesses. What's the solution? The seed paradigm might be one, but again, that may not be able to be ramped up and scaled up, so that it helps everybody who needs help. But in your view and from your reporting, what are people telling you, looking ahead, is the solution to this?
Well, I think we're starting to see some changes here. Some of the big banks and the round tables that have these top level executives, JP Morgan comes to mind. There's huge investment coming for Black businesses, for urban startups. I think that we're going to see that in the next year or two, that some of these restrictions and barriers that have been in place over the past, forever, for this kind of businesses to start up are going to lift. And there's going to be a lot of money available to take a risk and take a chance. And if you have a dream, they're going to help you try to make it come true. So I think what we could be seeing, to be optimistic, is a whole new wave of entrepreneurship and businesses. And, this is where you have like the Cajoux Creamery with the vegan ice cream. This was a great dream that they had, a great recipe, and they're making it happen. So I think we're going to see that.
And we have to keep in mind that, there are tens of thousands of small businesses here in the city of Baltimore. And Mayor-elect Brandon Scott is going to have to figure out ways of doing what he can to elevate them and to help them, because most of them are owned by people of color here in our city. Most of our residents are people of color, and most of the businesses, the small businesses, are owned by people of color. And many of them, are businesses that are one or two people. We're not talking about even 50 or 60 people. We're talking about very small operations, but vital to the neighborhoods that they're in and vital to the economic well-being of the city. So this is a great series, Mel. Thanks so much for the work that you and your colleagues did. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom. It's been great talking about it. I ask everybody, just take a look at Lexington Market and what's happening there. It's kind of an incubator, a really good example about what we're going to see in a more broader perspective of the city as far as new businesses coming online in the next 5 years.
Yeah, I agree. We did a piece about Lexington Market, a story about it a couple of weeks ago, and we'll do more because there are some things down there that are happening that have people very, very excited. Melody Simmons is a reporter for the Baltimore Business Journal, and we will have a link to the BBJ series Small Business Big Mission on the Midday webpage at WIPR.org. Coming up after a break, Ben Ray, the head of the Hamden Village Merchants Association. He'll bring us the perspective from the Avenue. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking today about the impact of the coronavirus on the retail sector in particular. While large retailers are targeting shoppers with big sales this holiday season, local businesses are encouraging consumers to keep their cash in the community this Christmas. Ben Ray is a small business owner and the president of the Hamden Village Merchants Association. He joins me now to discuss how he and his members are preparing for the holidays in the shadow of the pandemic. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. It's great to talk to you.
Great to have you as well. You are the proprietor of Atomic Books, a wonderful bookstore on Falls Road, just off of the Avenue in Hamden. What's your own personal experience at Atomic, and what are your members in the Village Merchants Association telling you about how things are going given the COVID situation?
Well, I mean, we're fortunate in that we have a very vibrant, strong, and active business community here, small business community. We just had a meeting this morning trying to lock down a bunch of things that we're going to be moving forward with in the community for the holiday season. So one of the things that we've been doing is the idea is, since I guess the mayor is announcing a further reduction in capacity for businesses, which is, you know, safety protocols, completely understand, not complaining about that at all. We don't know where we're going to be as we continue to move forward in the holiday season. So what we've been trying to do is gear up, move everybody more to or getting used to or preparing for an online sort of environment where you can place orders for businesses online, you can pick them up, you can do free local delivery, and we're rebuilding our Hamden Village Merchant website to function as sort of a directory that we're going to be directing everybody to. And even if the you know, businesses can continue to stay open as we progress through the holiday season, everybody has different protocols. Everybody has different hours. Nobody's functioning the way they were functioning in a pre-COVID environment. So it's a great way, and I strongly recommend anybody thinking about coming out and shopping or visiting the Avenue, if there are specific businesses you're looking at, to use our resources or contact those businesses to see how they're doing things.
Ben Ray of the Hamden Village Merchants Association. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. To join our conversation, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. And to tweet us, it's @MiddayWYPR. Let's go to the phones to Susan, who's calling from Baltimore County. Susan, welcome to Midday with Ben Ray.
Hey, thanks, Tom. I appreciate being here.
Ben,
I think it's
your
a
comment?
Fascinating discussion. And I just wanted to throw out there, I also am a small business owner, and I happen to own a restaurant called Citron, but I want to throw out there that a great holiday idea this year could be win-win with people buying e-gift cards to local restaurants. What do you think about that?
Yeah, works for me. Love to get a gift like that. Ben, are the restaurants on the Avenue and around Hamden having some success with that?
Yeah, since the COVID crisis first began, one of the things that we've regularly encouraged people to do is, if you want to support your local businesses, if you want to make sure that on the other side of this, the businesses that you love, the places that you like to eat, the places you like to shop or drink are still going to be there, is to buy gift cards from those businesses that you can then redeem at a later date. It helps the businesses tremendously. It's always a great gift to let the consumer use that however they want to use it. And most of our businesses here are doing gift cards and gift certificates and things like that.
And Susan, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
In your restaurant, Citron, is there, are you finding any resistance to the gift card idea? Because are there people who maybe aren't fully confident that when they can get around to using their gift card, which may be not until the spring, if they're reluctant to eat indoors, if they have to wait until they can eat outside, are you finding that folks are scared that, you know, maybe Citron might not be around in April or May or March, whenever it is that they could use the gift certificate? Are you having to handle that perception?
Yeah, Tom, no, I have to say, we haven't encountered that. I mean, our restaurant was very fortunate over the summer to have a huge outdoor area, which we still have. But we have curbside carryout. So even if we were to somehow be at a unique situation where no one would be allowed inside. We and other restaurants have, you know, quickly changed into carry-out activities with our same great menus. It's easy to order online. It's also, you can do it by phone. And the gift cards are good for carry-out. So, you know, order them now and use them through the month of December when you're tired of cooking.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the call, Susan. I appreciate it. And best of luck. And Ben Ray, in your business, Atomic Books, you're a bookstore. And, you know, people have been used to hanging out in bookstores sometimes for hours at a time and browsing and even sitting down and reading a little bit and, you know, making themselves at home. How have you adjusted in terms of your actual store rather than your online business, which I know is a separate kind of thing? But given the restrictions of the numbers of people you can have in the store at any one time and how long they can stay, how's it been for you at Atomic Books?
Yeah, and to add to that, we also have a bar in the back of the store that we can't operate currently as well. It's been, as a bookseller, part of the fun is interacting with the customers and talking about books. So that's been pretty hard. But we have been fortunate that we did have a website infrastructure that we could pivot to, and then start directing our customers to try to get them to do their browsing and their shopping online through our website, and then do curbside pickup, free local delivery, and then regular mail order. But we shut down about 2 weeks before. We went the about a week or two before the state went into a lockdown, just simply because we weren't feeling comfortable in that environment. And in that interim, what we have done is converted the interior of the store more into a sort of online fulfillment warehouse. We've added new shelving, et cetera, where we used to have tables that we could easily move away for in-store events. But since those are only existing digitally, we don't really need mobile tables anymore. So we have more shelving to help us find things. But even as things have slowly started to open back up and people are opening in limited capacities, the most difficult transition for us is, since most of our customers are using our website and ordering online and doing curbside pickup and things like that, we're only open during the week by appointment because we have to convert the store back from a mail order warehouse to something people can browse in. And in order to sort of balance that out, but we are doing limited capacity walk-ins on the weekends, which has worked out well.
410-662-8780. Our guest today, Ben Ray. He's the proprietor of Atomic Books in Hamden and the president of the Hamden Village Merchants Association. To email us, midday@wypr.org. To tweet us, it's @MiddayWYPR. And to follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. I'd love to hear from you, listeners, about your plans for holiday shopping. How important is it to you to patronize local businesses? Does it matter that you get your book from an Atomic Books or an Ivy Bookshop or a Greedy Reads bookshop as opposed to Amazon? Does it matter to you that these establishments on the avenue in Hamden and in neighborhoods around the city, you know, are really struggling at this COVID-infected moment that we find ourselves in? If so, give us a call. Again, 410-662-8780. So, Ben, this really is a matter of relationships and loyalty, it seems. I mean, on a certain level. I mean, the folks who've been coming to your store, I would imagine you've got customers that you've been, you know, dealing with for years. And it really is, to a certain extent, an almost ethical judgment that people have to make about where they're going to buy their next book or where they're going to have their next meal. It's more than just a financial decision. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, one of the things that we've seen in the last few years is, as people have come to realize that there is an ethical problem with relying on Amazon for your shopping needs, and as the large corporate chain bookstores have started to fail and recede, it's created a little bit more room for a number of other bookstores to open in the area. Atomic's been around for almost 30 years. You have the Ivy, you have Greedy Reads, you have a number of other smaller bookstores that have kind of popped up in different neighborhoods, in as a result of that. And one of the things that I think has happened is neighborhoods are starting to get used to the idea of having their own neighborhood bookstore. And so you can go there, you can shop, you can browse. It's bookstores function also as a community center, which is a little difficult right now, but where you can go and meet people, you go to readings, you go to signings. They're a vital part of communities. And I think as we've moved into this COVID crisis, and each of the different area bookstores have kind of tried to figure out how to move forward and exist in this environment, from my perspective, being a neighborhood bookstore, we also are fortunate in that we do have a lot of people that travel from all over the country and various parts of the world to visit us as sort of a tourist destination. But it's really, in this environment, that's not happening. And what's really been driven home is how vital a community bookstore a bookstore can be, a neighborhood bookstore can be. So that if you want to just get a book really quickly, you can just pop over. You don't have to worry about Amazon's delivery. You don't have to worry about Amazon's, pricing issues. You don't have to worry about, the moral implications of using a large corporate bookstore like that versus supporting a local business, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I will say, though, a few months ago, I guess last fall, maybe, it's been a while, I guess, I spoke with Ann Patchett, the wonderful author who owns a bookstore in Nashville, Tennessee. And she told me that Amazon is opening a brick and mortar bookstore across the street from her bookstore in Nashville, which is pretty wild. So Amazon thought enough of the competition that Ann Patchett was giving them to try to meet it directly. Let's go to the phones to Morgana, who's calling from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Ben Ray.
Hi, thank you. I was just calling in to sort of question of whether or not people are concerned about supporting local businesses in the pandemic rather than a big chain like Amazon. I'm literally in my at Pie Time, which is a pie and coffee shop in Canton, and I went there specifically because I wanted to support a local business. And I just kind of wanted to comment that I think that is important, and that it would really be something of a loss for the city if we lost small places like that after the pandemic.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, and be safe driving in the rain, Morgan. I appreciate it. And Ben, when the members of your association, the Hamden Merchants Association, talk to you, how would you assess their level of confidence moving forward? Are they going to make it? Do you expect to lose many businesses after this thing is over? What's your take on the next, short term, the next few months, and going into a post COVID world?
Right. So I think and those are great comments from Morgana. I totally agree with that sentiment, and we've been and most of the other business owners that I've talked to have been at points emotionally overwhelmed at how supportive people have been to our small businesses. And without that, we couldn't exist and we couldn't continue to move forward. There are bright spots in this time of darkness, and some of the bright spots have been, as a community, as people, how awesome we've been to each other. But in terms of the business community, we've taken a few hits already. Everybody's moving forward through the holiday season strategically, I think, with positivity and with hope. We can manage to cobble together some sort of holiday shopping that's safe and responsible, but can also sustain us. And that's where our association is coming in and working on things like, again, trying to build our HamdenMerchants.com website directory, running TV ads that'll direct people.
We'll have a link to the Merchants Association website. Ben Ray is the co-owner of Atomic Books in Hamden and the president of the Hamden Village Merchants Association. Thanks, Ben. Good luck and Godspeed.
Thanks, Tom. It was great.
That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, an update on Baltimore City's trial of the controversial aerial surveillance program, plus the legendary R&B jazz singer Frida Payne checks in against ahead of her gig at Keystone Corner here in Baltimore. That's coming up tomorrow. Stay tuned now for Here and Now. That's coming up next. And don't forget to download the Daily Dose tonight for a recap of all the local news you need to know. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. Take care. We'll talk again tomorrow.
You're listening to your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.